Well, you might have seen or heard about them. That is dogs being brought into hospitals to help boost patient morale, or even horses to help treat trauma, anxiety and depression. Demand for animal-assisted therapy is growing as healthcare providers look for more ways to address increasing mental health issues. In 2018, after a life-changing event, Wendy Coombe created an organisation to advance the therapies, setting ethical and professional standards, while Madeleine Flynn is one of the many healthcare providers to take on animals as part of their practice. And they both join me now. Wendy and Madeleine, welcome to Changing Australia.
Thanks, Sally.
Thank you, Sally.
Wendy, tell me about your story. You've come to all of this from a roundabout way. You were originally in a corporate role.
Mm-hmm.
What happened for you?
Well, I went to work like any other day, and that afternoon I don't remember how I got home. I think essentially, I always say my world went from black and white. Well, actually, it was only through my assistant's dog helping me walk back to the path of better health that my world went from black and white to colour, because it was a very unknown world. I'd had a corporate career or business, ran my own businesses for most of my adult life, and to go from that busy world to nothing and not even being able to leave home, and, you know, even after being a speaking in public forums, not being able to speak without a stutter, it was just a very different world. And it was through my psychologist that she recognised that my dog, who was just a member of our family, that he needed to be recognised as an assistance dog for me to participate out in community and also get the help that I needed. And it was through that experience where I was trying to find an organisation who could help me understand, well, how do I have my dog? I was, like most Australians, just thought the only dog that existed was a guide dog that went out in public. And I realised very quickly that even though there was, I couldn't have a corporate career anymore, there needed to be something done around setting up an organisation to help with referral pathways, you know, information and also funding, because many people, I was very fortunate, I had the financial means to pay for animal assisted therapy, which was also part of my journey back to better health. But not everybody can afford, even if it's Medicare rebated, they can't always afford the gap.
So you had a medical incident on that day, Wendy? Is it okay for me to ask?
Well, some people would refer to it as a breakdown.
Yeah.
Totally mentally. I think I described my head just felt like it was going to explode, that it had turned to concrete, my cognitive functioning, my nervous system, everything just decided to stop working. And the road back to good health was a long one, but it was only through the role of an assistance dog plus, you know, allied health support, animal-assisted therapy, that I actually got to where I am today, and I no longer need an assistance dog to participate in, you know, a social and community environment. And my cognitive functioning is certainly a lot better than it was back then.
And just to get up and under the terminology here, Wendy, what do we mean when we're talking about an assistance dog? Because there are other things like guide dogs, other people have companion dogs, and sometimes there are service dogs, there's some confusion. Can you help me understand those different terms?
Sure. So an assistance animal is defined by law. It's an animal that's been trained to alleviate the effects of a disability and meet standards of behaviour and hygiene. So the person needs to have a disability that they need support for, and the animal has been identified as being able to perform certain tasks that would actually support that person's disability. And they have a legal right to go out into public anywhere their handler goes. I mean, there are some exceptions like food preparation areas, some, you know, health sort of parts of hospitals that they wouldn't be able to go into. But they are allowed to fly on planes, they can go in taxis, Ubers, into restaurants, cafes with their handler, and to refuse public access would be discrimination, and there would be penalties that those businesses would be potentially going to face. Mm-hmm. If they don't allow the assistance animals to access. So that's different to animal-assisted therapy, which is what you initially introduced for this segment. And animal-assisted therapy is where you have a registered health professional, like Madeline, who you're about to interview as well, who integrate animals into part of their scope of practice. So the really important thing there, and there are other professions, other occupations, not just registered health professionals, there are teachers that deliver animal-assisted learning programs, and then there are non-qualified humans that have a very qualified animal that go in and visit aged care. So there's a whole variety of different...
There's a range there. Madeline, as a practitioner, in a really practical way, how do you incorporate animals into some of the therapies and care that you're providing? How does that work?
So, Sally, I work on my own little hobby farm. So I do multi-species farm-based work. I have done, you know, working in a clinical room with a dog, but my real goal was to do the outside work. So I think one of the things that I see is it just makes it a less stressful way to engage in therapy. You know, going to therapy isn't everyone's idea of a good time. So I think one of the things is if you're going to be going to therapy and you know you're going to see animals, and obviously this is for people who like animals, which is not everyone, but, you know, that is a more motivating way to go. And say particularly I work with adults, but I work a lot with kids. You know, if the kid thinks, oh, well, I'm going to go and see a llama or something, that can, you know, take some of that stress out. There's also, you know, research that if someone comes to see a therapist with an animal, they'll have a more positive view of the therapist, which is an interesting one and handy as well.
When
coming to therapy can be hard. And then from there, it just gives you so many more modalities. So, you know, I trained as a child psychotherapist and group therapists, et cetera, in the past. So I'm using all the mental health modalities. I'm an endorsed mental health OT, but it just gives you more modalities. So, for example, you know, when you're talking about tough stuff, you know, it could be trauma, you know, what's going on at school or, you know, relationship issues, you can be sitting with an animal, feeding an animal. So you've got that calming influence of the animal, but it also just takes that less, it's less confrontational. Like there's, you know, we can look around and, you know, look in the trees, listen to the birds, pat the dog or whatever it is, and then go back to talking about something. Like this is for, say, teenagers and adults in between. So you can move the focus, would be one example, you know, between being with the animals and doing something with the animals, feeding, playing or et cetera, and talking about difficult things. For little kids, it would be more activity-based, so doing feeding and using a lot of metaphor and those sorts of things. So it gives you just a lot more strategies, modalities to work with.
And Madeline, what does the evidence tell us about the effectiveness of using animals for some clients in some situations?
Yeah, I think that's a really good way to clarify it, that it is only, you know, some people, and say particularly people who like animals. So the whole idea of animal-assisted therapy is looking at the human-animal bond and then working with that as a therapeutic modality. So, you know, one of the big things, and, you know, Animal Therapy is limited, is doing a lot of work to help all of us be encouraging, you know, encouraging all of us to get on with some research and look at what the research is. I've just completed a very small, humble research project myself because there is, it's an evolving industry. You know, some places in the world, particularly America, UK, Europe, have been doing this for longer. There is more research, but there's amazing researchers everywhere doing this and showing that there are some benefits, as you say, for specific populations. There's so many different ways to do it, though. That can be one of the difficult things when you're looking at the research, but there's some great stuff looking at that working alongside animals could help with increasing communication, improving attention, and all the issues that, you know, we're seeing people for therapy.
Wendy, for you, what sort of difference do you see in people's lives when they get some animal assistance there that's really tailored to the needs that they might have?
Oh, Sally, there are so many examples I could actually give you of how people have benefited. I'll give you just some general benefits, and then I might give you some specific examples of individuals. But, you know, animals can be integrated into rehab to improve motor skills. There is a hospital over in Adelaide that integrates dogs into stroke recovery programs. And, of course, there's more motivation to throw a ball or brush a dog than going into a gym and doing functional exercises. So, you know, that whole motivation factor that... And willingness to engage in therapy, as Madeline alluded to, is very much a benefit. You know, some people won't... You know, we got a phone call from a person over in WA, a support coordinator, trying to get a referral to help a young woman who was self-harming. A terrible, extreme case of self-harming. She had plenty of money to go and access therapy, but she refused to leave her supervised housing. So we referred him to a canine-assisted social worker. And the aim of that social worker was to literally go and visit this girl in a supervised housing, let the girl know that the dog wanted to come and visit and say hello. That enabled that girl to start interacting with the dog to the point that eventually, as that relationship, therapeutic relationship, started to build, then, you know, the social worker invited her to take the dog for a walk. And, of course, she's still doing the job of a social worker, but that dog is improving that whole motivation to want to engage. You know, we know that with the even just the visitation animal programs, where the human, because animals don't deliver therapy, I have to say this. So they are therapeutic in nature. And so the therapeutic in nature part comes from studies that have shown an increase in oxytocin and a reduction in cortisol when somebody engages for a certain period of time with an animal, and of course reduces stress. So for those visitation programs, there is simply that interaction with the animal that's providing the therapeutic sort of outcome. But then you'll look at a program where you might... there was a study done by Monash Uni with neglected children who never learnt empathy or compassion. So the psychologist, the study was, if we integrate small animals into the psychology or capacity building sort of work that we're doing with these children, will that help to facilitate the learning of empathy and compassion? And there was an overwhelming finding that yes, it did, of course. And we have, if people are interested in the research on our website, we capture research a number of ways. We have a national scientific research group that reviews all the literature around working alongside animals, and in particular the animal welfare side and the standards, and that's what has informed our code of conduct. We work with Monash each year to do a specific study. At the moment, we've got Monash Uni students looking at the evidence behind assistance animals for autism, seizures, psychosocial disabilities and intellectual disabilities. We also have a researcher directory, and we have a database that we update all the time. And the research is extensive, but of course, you know, we probably need more around working alongside different animals, like the farm animals. There's probably not as much research out there for the incorporating different types of animals. But the other point I really want to make is that the existing profession, so a psychology, is an evidence-based practice. So just because there's the modality is incorporating the animals or integrating the animals into that existing evidence-based practice doesn't require necessarily further research if it's simply that engagement process.
Okay. Well, Wendy Coombe is the founder and director of Animal Therapies Limited. Wendy, thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
And Madeline Flynn is a registered occupational therapist using animals in her practice at InSpirit Therapy. And Madeline, thank you to you.
Thanks, Sally.